Broad Little Lies with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Welcome, everybody, to the show. We are here to talk about Season 2, Episode 3 of Big Little Lies on HBO, titled The End of the World.
Very exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah. What'd you guys think? Initial reactions? Hot takes? Anybody? Anybody?
I liked it, and I think there was a lot of fun stuff to talk about, but I don't know. Maybe it wasn't quite as good as last episode, but I still really, really liked it. That's my initial take.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Renata had another really big episode, which was really enjoyable to watch. Yeah. It's like the end of the world, but I also feel like it was like the beginning of the sort of upward motion of the season in a lot of ways, like particularly if you jump ahead a bit and look at the preview for next week, it looks like we're really on the fast track to the big climax of the season.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And I really did enjoy the complexity of this episode. I mean, just like we've seen throughout the whole season, just the complexity of some of the relationships. And we'll get into that more specifically later. But I think that this, once again, they just really dove into that head first. And it's really interesting to watch.
Agreed.
Yeah. I agree. I kind of like that the show is built in such a way that they just allow all these moments for just character interaction and mixing it up and putting different characters in different scenes together to see what happens and how it moves the story along. And not even so much how it moves the story along, but how it moves each character's character development along. And I just sad to say that that feels so rare in television these days. And it's just so enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
So I really liked it the first time that I saw it. Just there's just, like you said, there's so much complexity in it. I was infuriated by Mary Louise. But at the same time, I was also like kind of thinking, yeah, I don't know how I would handle all of the news that she kind of had thrown at her, but at the, you know, if it's your son, but on the other hand, I think that she's a total freaking psychopath. So there just, you know, there were so many things that characters did that I was like, oh my god, she did not. And then but I still came away with it the first time I watched it, really liking it. The second time I watched it, I still liked it, but I think I agree that I didn't like it as much as last week's episode. That being said, I would love to see Mary Louise and Renata. Like Mary Louise to try her shit, her little stick on like Renata, because can you imagine how well that would go over? It wouldn't.
I really hope. Now that they have interacted a little bit, I hope that comes to fruition. I feel like that would be absolutely incredible.
It was a very promising first interaction.
Yes.
This is, I mean, like you said, Amanda, Renata was kind of on fire again in this episode. And I think you really called it in the first episode, like this. I mean, I don't want to say it's the Renata show because everyone is totally bringing their A game. And I think everyone has interesting things to do. But she has like pretty consistently had just like the lines that you remember and just like the outbursts that are just really memorable.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, this is going to sound really cheesy, but let's go for it. Everybody was given, you know, like a meal to make, and Renata or Laura Dern put like the most spice in hers because my note for Renata is, hold on, where is it? Renata's level 10 plus continues.
Yes,
because her intensity is just all the way up here. But I think also we're starting to see the cracks, right? Like now even Gordon is saying, hey, I noticed that something is wrong with you. Your kid has noticed that something is wrong with you. And we see like Renata, I think we're seeing her, but we're not seeing the way that her family has seen it affecting her, like because we're not seeing her more private moments yet. We're seeing, you know, her in full force. So I do think that it's interesting. And I'm wondering, when are all the husbands going to get together and be like, you know, put all the puzzle pieces together? Like, maybe watching a dude die there was something there.
Seriously, yeah. And I think, you know, we've seen it so far. Like, coming into this, of course, we knew, like, Bonnie and Celeste were going to be the most affected, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been very apparent since episode one. But just like you're saying, Colleen, like, now even the characters with, like, the strong exterior, like Renata, we're kind of seeing that, like, oh, no, there have been changes with them, too. And again, it is funny, like you said, that their spouses are kind of like figuring out that maybe something's been weird, but like haven't traced it back to the day that.
Which, I mean, that has to be.
Somebody die.
That right. has to be for dramatic effect.
The scene with Bonnie's mother about, like, hello, duh. Yeah. Let's think what happened about 6 months ago.
Right.
A murder.
Yeah.
Right. And even if it had been a total accident, like, they still. We're
watched
a
dude die.
A man that just died, that they like, saw die.
And like the fact that it was like
violently.
You know, it's been so yeah. weird lately. And I just can't put my finger on why.
Like, like, because you could make a case for like Madeline being the worst or whatever, or any of the character, well, not any of the character really, but you could like make a case for some things, and it's like, no, the husbands really are the worst. Like, they just don't get anything.
Oh. They're still like having like a penis measuring contest when they interact with each other.
I do say that I love Ed's little subtle digs, like she's like, you're being so cruel, and he goes, oh, this would be a twofer. It'll piss off you and Nathan.
That's true. Adam Scott did have kind of a big episode this week, too.
For
he
doing
had some good lines.
He had some good lines. He did a lot of, like, silent skulking and, you know. But, yeah, okay. So, before we get too much into it, from last week, the tattoo thing. Do we want to talk about that a little bit? Because
yeah,
it did
we,
not
we
come
did
back.
Some, we did have some feedback from last week's episode.
Okay. Do you want to save that for feedback then? Because we didn't get anything else about that this episode. We had Madeline asked, Madeline, the shining beacon to us all, asked Celeste. I think who had the biggest episode today was the principal.
Seriously.
Breakout character.
The Medusa of Monterey.
The Medusa of Monterey. They're fucking Shakespearean.
And I do smoke. Want to go out back? I know a place where the kids won't see us.
Jay and I laughed out loud so hard at that scene last night.
MVP of the episode.
Oh, man. So yeah, do we want to talk about the tattoo thing now, or we can save it for feedback? That works too. Because like I said, they didn't really have too much alluding to it this week. We had Madeline ask her if she's gone on any more like early morning joyrides, and then the therapist.
Ooh,
yeah, right.
You don't say.
And then the therapist asked her if she's hurting herself, and she covers the wrist, and then you see her put the makeup on to hide it later on. So, I think the jury might still be out on whether that was a thing or not.
Well, I think the jury can still be out on whether she's being hurt by whoever she's having this late night, early morning joyride with. but I don't think that the jury is out on the tattoo. Like, I got some feedback from Tasia, who sent a screenshot and said, that is a motherfucking back tattoo. She was in her robe, high as fuck, and picked someone up for sex and has no memory of it. Rape. She's flashbacking as she's sobering. And then I also went back and looked at that again, and I got another screenshot that I posted on our
Instagram feed.
Instagram, and with a poll, about 30% of the people were wrong.
Oh boy,
lovely listeners. Sorry, but and to be fair, the screenshot is pretty dark. But like, it is a back tattoo. It is a huge like. Unfortunate choice, back tattoo, but it's definitely a tattoo, so it's definitely not Perry, and it's definitely them together.
Yeah, I would have to say this past week, you've all made a very convincing argument. I was originally not on team back tattoo, but I think I have changed my tune. I think the evidence is pretty compelling. I think my real gripe is, how is it going to pay off in the rest of the season. Right. Like, if it's like, just going to be this one-off thing to kind of show that, like, Celeste is going off the rails as she's trying to, like, get over this trauma. Like, I'm not for it. But I think – and I would hope that a show that is so sensitive to complexity would do a better job of bringing – of, like, not – setting something up just to let it hang, that like, yeah, I'm hoping that it will pay back at some point later on down the season.
I mean, I definitely have faith, and Kayla agrees though that that's 100% a back to tattoo, because she and her roommate both noticed it and were like, eyebrow raise. But I think, Amanda, to your point, I think they'll get there, because they did kind of allude to it a little bit. I mean, the joyride comment aside, with the therapist, since she, when she's asking about the bruise, she talks about how, you know, sometimes people who suffer PTSD or like just got out of this kind of relationship seek it out. And so I think in the context of that therapy session, she was just talking about self-inflicted wounds. But like, I think we, the viewer, with the more information that we have, we can sort of see that also as perhaps Celeste going out and seeking out really questionable interactions with men, and that maybe that will come into play again.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a very valid point.
If we are making a case for Celeste not have doing something like that, we see at the end that she also goes on joyrides by herself, so.
True, very true.
I went a long way for a rubbing one out joke.
Do what you gotta do, you know? Sometimes you gotta scratch that itch.
Yep. Go the extra mile.
Yeah. Just gotta relieve the urge.
All right. So Shandy is referring to the picture. She's reading responses from our Instagram page, which you guys can all check out if you're interested. That was a part of the Instagram story, but we do post things pretty regularly on there, and that would be The Broadcasters 3 on Instagram. If you're listening to this now on the Whole Enchilada feed, we also have our own individual feed on iTunes, and we would love if you could subscribe to that and maybe leave us a review. We're on Google Play, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher now, all the places, so please check us out. We'd really appreciate that. And I guess if you have anything that you want to, if we're talking about this and we make a point that you really want to give us feedback for, you can email us thebroadcasters3@gmail.com, or you can give us a voicemail, 331-276-2373. All this gets put in the show notes too, so you can swipe up or however the youngins do that these days on their phone to get to all of that. And I will also have the link to the feed in the iTunes.
And so you can ask Celeste how to do that.
Yes. Oh. All right. Let's get into a deeper discussion. Buckle in. We're going on a joyride, everyone. The world might end. It might be sweet relief for Renata and Gordon and the rest of us, but let's talk about the therapist.
Because okay, in my notes is the first thing I have. The therapist again, ...
Yeah.
Is she just a plot device, or is she just really that terrible at her job? Or is this like, you know, some kind of newfound therapy?
However, I will say before we get into therapist bashing, okay, and there is a lot to
I'm
bash.
Not therapist bashing.
I'm going to therapist bash.
Okay.
But to give her one bone, the whole like PTSD and like the whole conversation she had with Celeste about, you know, soldiers coming back from war and like, you know, life not being enough. And like, maybe that's sort of something she's going through. That actually did feel like a legitimate thing a therapist would do, mainly based on my own experience with therapists. This is a similar line of discussion that like my therapist will kind of employ with me. Mm-hmm. So like that felt really like true and real to me. And that one line that she said about, you know, you miss the war, Celeste, I thought that was just a really great line.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, everything else,
So I actually have some feedback from a friend who I didn't ask if I could cite him on the podcast, so I just won't say his name, but he listened to a past episode when we had like, you know, voiced this concern about the therapist, And he texted me that he has a friend who has a PhD in psychology and with whom he spoke about the therapist, and that this friend of his, so now we're like, you know, 2 degrees removed, said that the therapist seems to be less full of shit than most of the other characters, and they've avoided making her a therapist stereotype so far. I'd go see her. So it's one psychology PhD's opinion on the matter.
Well, as no, we have zero. Yeah, we have PhDs amongst the three of us.
Two of the three of us have gone to therapy.
One of us currently still goes every week.
True, true. Oh, boy. Okay, so Madeline and Ed are now seeing the same therapist, and you know, she's kind of calling Madeline out for the college thing, which was interesting. And then she kind of calls Ed out, too. And It was interesting because at first I was like, it's not his fault that she made that decision. But then I thought it was interesting that she kind of was like, but you're disengaged. So, which I could see that case, too, where Ed was trying to be such a nice guy, Ed, that's not really what Madeline needs.
Totally. And like, having just recently finished reading The State of Affairs by Esther Perel, I was so there for that. And like, I'm glad that she went there, because it is, I think, usually seen as sort of like a one-sided thing, but a relationship involves at least two people. And
right. And at the end of the day, the person that made the decision made that decision and hurt somebody else, but there's always mitigating factors that, you know, contribute. I hate to use the both sides words, so I won't, but exactly.
Well, but just again, said. Just like showing the complexity of human relationships and situations. That,
exactly.
You know, that's all.
Yeah. And then what you say,
and that to me, it felt like an introductory session. You know, like that is something, albeit I think her questions felt a little more aggressive than
she's always aggressive. That's the
she's always like, aggressive. Not really aggressive,
but they didn't feel contextually out of place. Like, I think if you have new clients that are coming into couples therapy, like, you would ask those really pointed questions to get a broader sense of what is happening between the lines and how it goes deeper, because often it's not completely what any, no one's side is completely 100% the truth. So that felt true to me. But the thing that I felt really weird about is why would you go to your best friend's therapist? Is she the only therapist in town?
I know.
I mean, like, Monterey's small, but it's not that small. I was kind of like, did they just not want to cast like another?
Yeah, right.
People get confused with too many characters. We already have too many women on this show.
They're paying the actress per episode, so they really wanted to give her some extra scenes. But it was funny when she was saying Ed is either wonderfully accommodating or profoundly disengaged, and my first thought was, to Madeline, wonderfully accommodating is profoundly disengaged.
Yeah, totally. So.
Especially then we find out about how she saw her dad having the affair, and apparently she cries at the wrong parts of The Wizard of Oz. And
yeah, that was intense.
Yeah, there was a lot. I mean, every week we've talked about the way that the relationships between parents and their children are very strongly portrayed. And last week we didn't really mention it, and I meant to, and I didn't, that it was funny just with all the way that we saw the mothers kind of talking to their children and trying to make them feel better about things. We had Madeline then who, you know, Chloe asks, is Daddy mad at me? And she's like, Daddy's mad, but we're going to get over it. Like, doesn't even say, oh, sweetie, he's not mad at you. He's mad at me.
Right.
Right.
Just kind of, I mean, Madeline, and then this episode, there was one point where I just wrote down, shut the fuck up, Madeline. And it wasn't her speech.
Was it during her speech?
No. No.
Just exercising some demons.
I love this speech at the end.
Me too, actually.
Yeah. It was when she was, I mean, I would probably kill them all in real life, except maybe not Bonnie, because they all seem like they would be just somewhat intolerable. Renata's an anti-vaxxer, right? I mean,
I don't know, though.
No, I don't think so. I think she's like an anti a lot of things, but I feel like she would, because she's so protective of her little girl, that I think she would 100% vaccinate her.
And I think that she would Jessica Biel her and be like, I'm just doctor shopping to find the one that's going to give her the vaccination schedule that I want, which is like none of them. anyway, okay, going back though to Madeline, the part where I wanted her to shut up was when she was talking to Ed at the in the cafeteria, and she was like, you're being so cruel. And it's like, that wasn't really that cruel. That was like, I guess, Ed being mean for Ed, but it wasn't really that mean.
Yeah, and it was an empty threat anyway.
Exactly.
Not like anything he would actually do, but...
Exactly.
Well, maybe he's just usually such a doormat that, you know, that...
Well, and I feel like Madeline also a lot of times just kind of says exactly what she's thinking without like stopping to like think about it. It just goes from like brain to mouth like very quickly.
Yes. And the other time that I was like, please, Madeline, stop talking, was when she made Celeste's like bad marriage like all about herself. And she's like, and my friendships, because you couldn't even tell me. I'm like, oh my God, Madeline.
Oh, see, I actually really loved that scene.
I liked the scene overall. I just thought it was a little bit like, and both times I watched it, I felt that she was making it like coming back around herself. And it's, you know, to me, seemed very on brand. But
yeah,
right. And I think maybe that's why I liked it. I think it was a very good example of like female intimacy. And like with your closest friend, you can just be completely 100% yourself. And like Madeline is a little self-centered. So
yes.
It was on brand, as you say.
Yes. And Celeste is okay with that.
Right. And I think that's probably why that friendship works.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Did we want to talk about the speech? Because I loved the speech.
Let's talk about the speech.
Can we just like leading up to the speech, because the whole reason for the speech was the way that they're teaching about the climate catastrophe in school. And I just have a note, like, is this the only mainstream TV show really showing the crisis? I just like, I've been so impressed and loving it from
Superstore. Superstore has absolutely been tackling climate change too.
Okay, cool.
They've had episodes dedicated to it. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, well, that's amazing.
Superstore with Shandy, Amanda, and Colleen and Jay.
I would totally do that. And one of the characters from Superstore was Dr. Bo Peep. So,
oh wow,
she looks familiar. I feel like that actress has like been kicking around for a while.
Yeah. anyway, Shandy, I know. Listen, if you want to hear me gush more about Superstore, go listen to our other show, The Broadcast, because the most recent episode, I definitely gush about it. And the one before that. And the one before that. I recently binged all four seasons, and they're lovely.
Nice. I still need to do that. And that's actually, that's really cool to hear that they're talking about the climate crisis. But I was just like, I don't know, because they mentioned it in the first episode about like, what's the point of going to college if like, you know, like basically,
oh, you're right,
the world's not going to exist anymore. And then it came up again, like in a really profound way in this episode too. And I just thought that was pretty amazing. And very, I don't know, just very avant-garde, even like it shouldn't be avant-garde. It should be like way old guard, but you know, it's just like, it's not really being talked about. And so to see it in such a interesting way again, in this was just really, really awesome.
Yeah. So let's talk about the speech and then we'll pivot over to the Amabella climate change and all of that. Anybody have any thoughts? Did you cringe when she was up there? I kind of, everybody's face as she kept talking, like even Nathan and Bonnie were like, and what was it? Renata was like, is she having like a full blown meltdown?
That's about time, right? Right. It was funny too, because just the way that they're all sitting there in the assembling, like all of the adults are kind of like misbehaving. It's like, you know, you put the adult back in the school situation and they start acting again like school children. And, you know, they're like being disruptive and not listening. And then you have the principal calling out Madeline very much. It just like reminds you of a classroom. Calling yes. her up there in the first place, which was pretty funny.
That was, yeah. And, you know, you're a beacon among us, Madeline. Beacon among us. I am definitely going to use that someday. Just you wait. But yeah, okay. So she gets emotional. Ed is just kind of standing there like, whatevs. And then...
Yeah, there was one thing I wanted to bring up, and I meant to bring it up in our last episode and sort of forgot. But there's like these moments that we're starting to see throughout the season where they... The pacing, they start to play with this real like hyper-realism in the way the show is edited together. I think the first time we saw it was in the courtroom scene where all of a sudden Renata sees everyone laughing at her.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we saw it again with Bonnie's mother, with the visions and the quick flashes of water. And then we saw it again in this scene where all of a sudden it cuts to an empty auditorium and all Madeline can see is Ed. And I think that's really interesting. And I think they're just really doing it in a very cool way. And it really does help punctuate moments where our character is having a really overtly emotional struggle.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so cool. And I've been wanting to bring it up. And I loved how it played out in that scene that that Madeline started on a tangent and she completely lost her way and let her emotions overtake her. And really it became about something completely different. It came about how lost she was in the fact that her husband and her were at such opposing corners and were literally an auditorium away from each other. And I loved it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm. Amanda, you're on fire lately with the observations, with the opening credits. It's kind of similar how they do the waves crashing, which I went back and rewatched the last 10 or so, 12, 15 minutes, whatever, of the finale from season one tonight. And I forgot that the montage at the very end where you see what went down is interspersed with the waves crashing too.
Oh yeah,
I had, and you know that beautiful piano music. I had forgotten that, and it just kind of reminded me of the way that they're really using that, because even today with Bonnie, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, we had the water theme that returned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting. And then I guess to finish off the Ed and Madeline storyline for this week, Ed and Celeste having it out a little bit at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, they both had
protective
points.
Celeste is of Madeline.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, I got to say, I'm not on anybody's team in that. I'm like, oh, yeah, good point. Like, you're right. I would have said something, too. But, you know, he came back with, then I'd be like, all right, fair point. Like, fair enough. But.
Yeah, it just felt really real.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And again, like we were saying at the beginning of the episode, seeing, like, new combinations of people interacting. Because I feel like we didn't really see Ed and Celeste ever interact much. Even though, because they have that common link of Madeline, they obviously know each other, and I'm sure they have interacted. Yeah. But to then actually see it on screen, especially for something so interesting, was pretty cool.
Yeah,
for sure.
Oh, did you guys notice, the side note, that in the credit scenes, Nicole Kidman's daughters are credited as school children?
Oh.
Yeah. And
I had not. Good eye.
Yeah, so both of her daughters are in it as school children. She, you know, doesn't ever really let her daughters get photographed, so nobody, you know, it's not like her kids with Tom Cruise, who I'd probably recognize right away in a scene. So tonight I froze it on the classroom scene, and there's one little girl that's in the scene. She's got very blonde hair, and she's sitting up front, and you can see her side profile looks exactly like Nicole Kidman's, like, nose and side profile. So I think that has to be one of them. And then I couldn't pick out who the other one was. I stared at the screen. And I was like, that one might look a little bit like Keith Urban, but I couldn't figure it out. But one of them, if I was going to put money on who one of them was, I would bet it was that little blonde girl that was in the front of the classroom. But cool, right?
Oh, yeah. Cool. We'll have to pay more attention.
Yeah, apparently they've...
See if they make another reappearance.
Yeah, apparently they've been in it this season so far, because I Googled it then last night just to confirm, were they just cameos? And she, after last week's episode, was the article I found that, pointed out that they were in the credits. And I guess they've just been in scenes as, in the class, in the secondary class.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Anyway, there's your little Easter egg. Yeah. all right, so climate change. Amabella she's struggling. Girl is struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would be stressed out too. I mean, that was a really far and hard leap to take Charlotte's Web to
Oh my God.
Doesn't want us to eat pork. And
yes.
All I was thinking, and that was actually the note I wrote down when Shandy, where you were saying how really awesome it is and avant-garde that the show is talking about climate change and this really important thing. All I could think about is how they did it really well and how they also did it really sloppily and clumsy. It's really right. Well, the scene when Jane is on the date and the guy is talking about needing to know where your fish is from because, lead and mercury and all sorts of terrible things that make me very sad inside. But then to see in that classroom scene, it was just really clunky. And
it was almost like he was told, okay, work sustainability into a lesson. Yeah. And the guy was this sounds like a good point to insert it in.
Right. It's I'm glad we're talking about it. But it also felt very much just fodder for right wings to be see, they're indoctrinating our children with their their false claims of climate change. It felt a little too heavy-handed and
okay,
a pile of bricks.
Yes, because that was so that was a very deep Charlotte's Web talk though, and you could tell that those kids are products of their parents, because we had she's lying to protect him. Parents lie to their kids all the time.
I know.
And then we had the other little girl who was it's marketability.
I was they seem a little bit smarter than their age group, but
which I think has to come be that has to be making a point of who their parents all are, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because I thought that was so funny. And then, we get to sustainability. But yeah, so Renata's storyline, she is, again, she's at DEF CON 11. And what did she say? She was I will be rich and
I'll buy everyone a polar bear.
Yeah.
The polar bear thing might have been my favorite of the episode.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to
buy every kid a polar bear.
Okay, she says, I will rise up. I will buy a fucking polar bear for every kid in this school.
Which, again, is such a funny contrast, because you have the kids learning about the impending climate catastrophe. And meanwhile, their parents, although they pay for this, expensive, well, it's supposed to be a public school, but whatever, they pay, to live there so that their kids can go to this fancy school. But they're so very clearly part of the problem and completely unconcerned. And their lifestyle is not sustainable, but
exactly.
It's one of the most endangered animals on the planet because of climate change.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Again, good example of subtle.
Yes. Subtle. Which is, I think that's Renata's whole thing. This episode, we talked about it, a half hour ago, about how she's clearly stressing her daughter out. And everybody has noticed that how she is just she's so self-unaware, right? Or unself-aware. What's the right word? Self-unaware, I think.
Not self-aware?
Unself-aware?
All of them. All of the above. Let's
Whatever.
Go with all of them.
She's not... How would I just say she's not self-aware?
Yeah.
And because if I was, writing this sentence out, I would just delete everything I just said and say she's not self-aware. Uh, that she doesn't even see that her, like, being, you know, crazy all of the time is stressing her daughter out just as much as, you know, the father's issues and, well, mainly the end of the world, but... mainly the end of the world. But I mean, we just see this denial, and I wonder if we're headed for a Renata breakdown in general, because, you know, something's got to give at some point. Or maybe she's just, you know, like, got that, like, cockroach mentality where she's like, I'm gonna rise up, I am gonna, like, you can't hurt me, whatever.
I kind of hope we do get a Renata breakdown, though.
Can you imagine how amazing that would be too? I mean, Laura Dern would just kill it.
Right. And I think for her character, I think the scene with her husband in his, like, toy room.
Throw out your shit.
Sell your toys. Sounds familiar. Do they have Tron?
Right. Yeah, never Tron. Won. That might have been where Tron ended up. Do we know who bought Tron?
Might we don't know the who HBO, brought Tron.
We- set designers. We don't know. We can't confirm or deny. But anyway, my point. I think it really brought to my attention something I hadn't thought about is Renata's backstory and how, you know, she did kind of come from being poor, and that all this lashing out is just that. Like, it's kind of a front to keep herself protected. And it's almost like the more scared and threatened she is, like, the bigger and louder and aggressive she becomes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
And even in the hospital scene, does she mock the doctor? She's like,
yes.
Right. I think that's a great example that, like, she's worried about her daughter, and so she lashes out at everybody in this big over the top
way but
to hide her insecurities.
Right.
It's such an aggression, like, whoa.
And it's not even that she's worried about the doctor. Is the doctor is sitting there being like, team, you guys need, like, family counseling, and threatening, like, her view of, like, life. And
yeah,
you know,
I love that, though. Like, we're transferring her to Stanford. Why? Stanford.
Like, why do I have to justify this with an answer?
He's like, she's actually cleared for Stanford.
Yeah, like, she had a panic attack. It happens.
Why? Because she can leave. She doesn't need to be here anymore or anywhere. She doesn't need to be in Stanford either.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that whole thing. And then, you know, I kind of thought that it was, I liked that Gordon kind of snapped back at her, like, clapped back a little bit, where he's like, I know that, Renata.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I kind of liked that he wasn't just, like, passively taking it, because he saw, like, what she was doing. And, you know, not that he's any kind of a sympathetic character whatsoever. I just kind of liked the dynamic of watching her get at least a little bit of a foil. But yeah, no, that was great when she walks into the room and she's like, number one, we're throwing her a birthday party because she is unhappy. And we're sparing no cost, spare no expenses. Number two.
Because she's unhappy. She gets this big, shiny birthday party because she's unhappy.
Yeah.
Big, shiny birthday party that they can't afford.
But they can't afford. Exactly.
Yeah.
Number two, I had it out with the principal. And number three, sell your toys.
I loved that. But I did, and I love the scene between them too, because I think just like in the scene with Madeline and Ed at the therapist office, where, you know, the show is choosing to not do the simple thing and just go down the, like, okay, it's all one-sided because she cheated on Ed, and look at it a little bit more, like, in a nuanced way, more holistically. That's definitely than what they're doing here too, because on the surface it's like, well, yeah, like, Gordon is hugely at fault, but I like that he's like, well, you know, there are other factors that are coming into play here in, like, their family dynamics. And I just think that that's, it's just so much more interesting than, you know, than treating it as, like, a one note kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. Sure. It is. It's more, it's exactly, it kind of gives it multi dimensions. And I really like that. Because we could easily have Gordon be, like, passive or be like, all right, you know, tail between my legs, I messed this up. But he has taken ownership of what he did while also being like, but you've changed. There's something going on with you. Yeah. I've noticed it. You know, like.
Yeah. Like, I may have lost all of our family's money, but our daughter just had a panic attack for a different reason.
Right.
Like, that's on you.
I don't think it's completely my fault.
Yeah.
Maybe sitting here playing with my giant adult train set But I have a feeling there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Like, I get it. And then on it. Before we wrap up, what's her name?
Renata.
Thank you. Before we wrap up Renata's storyline, how funny was it where the Amabella's like condition kept getting worse? Like, by the end, she was in a coma.
Oh my God, I loved that. That was hilarious. My daughter was in a coma. Like, make sure to tell them.
Like, what?
That's great.
It's like, she was in a coma and I will be rich again.
Two things away from this discussion. Those are the two.
Again, I can't wait to see more of the principal in the future because he was just a delight.
Yes. Yeah, he has had it.
All right, and now to wrap up, I think we've got a little bit of the Perry problem here, the Mary Louise of it all, I suppose. Oh. Yeah. So how about that? Everybody's been listening for the last 45 minutes being like, when are they going to talk about like the most offensive thing that could have probably been having? And that would be, you know, a rape victim's rapist mother trying to force a paternity test and then pretty much creepily stalking her and emotionally manipulating her with pictures. Cause that was pretty horrible. Yeah.
That was pretty intense. Mary Louise has just got her tendrils like just branching out and taking over. Yeah. The cop.
Yeah, totally. And just again, like they've done with all of the other characters, I think it's just so captivating though too, because it is a complicated situation. Like, she's terrible. And all of my like instincts and my, you know, physical response to her is revulsion and anger. And I hate how much she victim blames. But then there's this part of me that's like, she also just lost her son and is like learning all of these terrible things about him. And so there's like a little part, there's like that human part where there's you have to be like,
right? That's got to be really hard to process.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't make her behavior okay, but it kind of explains it a little bit.
Right. It softens her edges other than just being like the big bad of the season. The fact that like this woman, and not only just like, yeah, like you find out your son has done all these terrible things, but like your son that like you clearly put up on this big crystal pedestal.
Yes.
So like, it doesn't explain anything away, but it does give her an extra layer of context and like complication that we really like. You'd be a fool to ignore.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing that for us as listeners that is more kind of up for debate is not like, is her reaction like over the top or not? Because it's, you know, we just talk, it's not, but it's, has that been her for her entire life? Where did she kind of create Perry the perfect monster? Or what did she, he was the best monster is what they kind of called him. And I was like, that's like some, yeah,
I think you're totally onto something there.
Yeah, like that's Celeste's like autobiography title is like the best monster, but
I was just gonna say it also really makes me think of the Big Little Round Table. There are on the HBO website, there are two parts to it so far, and each part is like 3.5 minutes. If you haven't watched it yet, I really recommend watching it. It's all, the six main women sit down and talk about some things. And one of the things that they talk about is what are we responsible for as mothers? What are we responsible for? And they talk about how just women in general sort of like take on the responsibility of their children and of the whole world. And like, you know, like if someone is at fault, like they are conditioned to take that on. And that's also how then as a society, we read women. And that's, I think, how we've all been socialized to think about women. So when I saw that, it made me pull back a little bit just to maybe pause and like reconsider Mary Louise. I'm not like, you know, changing my opinion on her, but it was interesting. It was like, okay, yeah. I don't know, right? Because we're all looking at her like, okay, so she's 100% got to be the reason that Perry's a monster.
But, or was she? Like, is she?
And,
like,
yeah.
She's part of it, and Perry is just a monster because he just is.
Right.
His
and
own
speaking
doing.
So, A, she has that conversation with Jane. This is during the conversation where she's showing the other dead son's pictures, the uncle, who I guess Ziggy looks a lot like. And she talks about how he was the sweetest little boy. And, you know, I think we had Jane who was wrestling with the fact last season, right? Like, is Ziggy going to grow up to be as violent as his father? Is it nature versus nurture? That probably, like, the look on Jane's face when she, you know, hears that he was the sweetest, Perry was the sweetest little boy, was somewhat heartbreaking. But during that scene when she asks him, like, did you see any good in him or whatever? And Jane's like, no. Then Mary Louise says, I can't surrender to this notion that he was evil. I can't. I just do so want to believe that there was good in him.
Yeah, no, it's rough. Like, the whole thing is really rough. I think, first of all, I love that Jane called her out on that when she said that Perry was the sweetest little boy. And she was like, well, but he grew up to be neither of those things.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
sweetest, gentlest boy. I was like, get it, girl. That's yes. I was really glad that she said that. But then, I mean, I have to also think that, like, Perry was a sweet little boy in the eyes of his mother.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Like, was
who
he
put him on a pedestal. So how much, you know, she's really surprised by all of this. How well did she really know him?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so this whole thing, though, with the stalking and the paternity test was just all sorts of cringy and infuriating. And I felt terrible for Jane.
Right. But I think Jane also just handled it, like, really well and really mature. Like, a lot of the lines, like, those deliveries could have been done with a lot of anger. And I really appreciated the decision to make her character, like, keep a cool, like, cooler heads prevailed. And, like, everything she said was said calmly and as fact, because it was. And I think it made for a much more impactful scene that way.
Right. It's like the anti-Renata.
Yeah, totally. For sure.
And I also think that that's got to be sort of, like, healing in a way for her, very therapeutic to, you know, she never really got to confront Perry about it, but she does get to confront his mother and actually say the things that she's thinking and tell her truth and deliver it in a way, you know, now it's like 7 years removed or whatever. So I think that's got to be sort of really good for her own healing. And then I think it's also just fascinatingly complex, the relationship between them anyway, because she's really taken with the photographs, but, like, I can understand why.
Right. Cause, like,
yeah, they look like her child.
Right.
And for better or for worse, like, this represents half of his DNA. So it's understandable that she would,
It's, you know,
and
nature.
She, I think Jane has always shown us that she really looks out for Ziggy. And so it's almost like I could see her. I mean, I don't know if it's possible because Mary Louise is definitely, like, you know.
Right. Mary Louise. There's still something going on there.
There's something going on there. But, like, if Mary Louise's intentions did prove to be pure or whatever, I could totally see Jane sort of, like, at least bearing the hatchet with her in order to give her son access to one of his grandparents.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's a good point.
Before we close out on the Mary Louise stuff, I read a review today from that website that I love, Pajiba, and the reviewer pointed out that Mary Louise is one of those people who she feels that as long as she says something politely, she can get away with doing, like, all sorts of manipulative evil shit. Like, as long as you keep it, like, in its lane, you can, you're forgiven. And
as long as you end it with bless their heart.
Right, exactly. And I was like, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that. You know, like, and if Mayor Louise ends up not having, you know, the purest of intentions, which again, then we see that she's snooping through the medicine cabinet and like power to Celeste, who is just like, you know, I need it because, you know, from the pain, like when he would like kick me.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked that she was getting her voice back a little bit on that. Yeah. She called her out.
So. Yeah. Does anybody else have anything that they want to bring up before we move on to the local stuff?
I think Bonnie, we haven't talked about Bonnie.
Oh, my goodness. We haven't talked about Bonnie.
She had a small part to play this episode, but I think it was really interesting nonetheless. I think, you know, we really see her character turning a corner with the flashbacks with her mom. Like, I think, you know, finding some inner strength that she probably forgot she had.
Yes. And I, like I said earlier, they have the water scenes, and I guess that just kind of, to me, tied it back to the, like, the waves crashing and all of that. And I mean, yes, clearly Bonnie is, I think we're going to get a lot of Bonnie backstory this season, especially because when, she's talking to Jane, she says, you know, I'm such a hypocrite. Nathan has no idea who I am. And then, you know, it's kind of just left
there. That's one of my favorite lines of the episode.
Yeah.
Which I love, too, because Jane just took that as, like, you know, having to do with the whole period of it all. But, like, I think that we can see that it was certainly more than that.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it stemmed way so much farther back than, than the incidents of a year ago or whatever the fall happened.
But so my question, though, is that pool scene that we saw, was that supposed to be Bonnie and her kid when her kid was small? Or was that supposed to be Bonnie as a kid?
Because I watched it in closed captioning and it was credited as young Bonnie.
Okay, cool. Because that makes
no sense. No, it's definitely it's young Bonnie.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be, I guess, maybe, I don't know, how her mom taught her hard lessons and it was, you know, forced on her, which again goes back to, like, the whole parent-child relationship that we keep seeing this season, where, you know, perhaps Bonnie was molded in a rough parenting style. I mean, we know that her mom had a drinking problem because, you know, we get that. Mm-hmm. So, and clearly we see now that her mom forced her underwater to learn how to swim, hold her breath.
Yeah.
I think that also goes back to, like, you were starting to say, like, she's kind of getting her groove back a little bit. She's smiling with Ed, where she's remembering, you know, to hold her breath to get through it. So maybe that's also what she's kind of relating to real life as well.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Like, definitely. I'm underwater, but I think, you know, like, the idea that we get of her upbringing with that one scene, I think I also, Bonnie is definitely, like, very highly attuned to abuse. And, you know, she saw what was happening with Perry and Celeste. Like, she read that correctly right away and went running to them.
Yes.
So I definitely think there's some darkness in.
Yes. In Bonnie's past. Yeah. And I love Zoe Kravitz. So I'm really excited to get into whatever, like, delve in deeper. Meteor roles.
Yeah, I'm waiting for her Renata episode.
Yeah. Yes,
her Big Bonnie episode, and yeah. I think it seems as though, like, next week. I think some real, because and also I was just thinking, we Mary Louise and Bonnie haven't had an interaction yet, right? She's the last of the Monterey Five to have a one-on-one.
Yeah, Mary Louise. I believe so.
So maybe next week, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that if Bonnie is starting to get her groove back, I don't think that's going to send her to pieces. I think that meeting that woman, if she is in, like, full Mary Louise mode, is going to make her stronger.
I agree.
Cool. All right, well, I think that's it for our discussion. Does anybody have anything else? Otherwise, I think maybe it's time to move into some feedback.
Let's do it. Good.
All right. Sorry, I just, like, Matthew McConaughey'd you guys. I was like, all right, all right, all right.
All right. These high school girls. Sorry, so creepy, but so quotable.
I still love that movie.
Yes. I watched it on a plane recently. I think maybe coming back from Raleigh. Oh, I was like, Dazed and Confused is one of the options. Yeah.
That's a very good plane movie.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that movie.
What?
You'd like it. Nothing happens. It's a great movie. Literally nothing happens.
Awesome. Cool. All right.
Life of life.
Yeah. All right. So this comes from the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/group/JandJackGroups. We also have a Facebook page. If you search for The Broadcast or The Broadcast with Amanda Shani and Colleen, you should find us. So Jana says, is anyone else hoping Leslie Knope shows up at a Monterey City Council meeting? I am hoping that Leslie Knope shows up 100% of the time in all situations.
Yeah, she could show up anywhere and it would be the best day of my life.
It would be the best.
Can you imagine that clash, though, between her and these characters?
Oh my God. Ever been, like, more, like, diametrically opposed character?
I would love Yeah, I would love to watch Leslie Knope face off against any of these women. I don't even think that any of these women even know what a calzone is, okay?
Definitely not.
Definitely not. They probably don't eat whipped cream. No pancakes.
No pancakes.
Zero pancakes.
Yeah.
Maybe the paleo ones. They sell those at Costco.
Yeah. Or the ones that you make out of just like mashed up bananas.
Yes. I've seen those on the Pinterest. Yeah. All right. Anyway, sorry. Getting back to the feedback. Dennis says, so this is, okay. Dennis is about to comment on our question last week about jurisdiction of where Gordon would have been kept. And Dennis says, he answered the call. Today, the boundaries of the Northern District of California encompass 15 counties. Alameda, Shandy, why don't you read the counties?
I'm probably going to get some of them wrong too. But right. Alameda, Contra Costa, Del Norte, Humboldt, Lake Marin, Mendocino, Monterey, Napa, San Benito, San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, and Sonoma. The court has 4 courthouses in San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, and Eureka, 14 district judgeships, also known as Article III judgeships, and 12 magistrate judgeships. The closest to Monterey is the San Jose Federal Courthouse, which is probably like an hour and 20 minutes away from here, which houses 3 Article III federal judges and 3 magistrate judges. The Marshals Service pays state and local governments for housing federal prisoners until they are convicted and assigned a federal prison. The Marshals Service is dependent upon state or local governments for the provision of detention space and services for federal prisoners. In support of this requirement, agreements are established with local and state governments willing to provide detention space for federal prisoners. Whew, there we go.
Cool. Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
And then Dennis finishes, sorry if I don't know this. Sorry if I should know this, I don't. But do we know how Perry's brother died? We know there was an accident, but we don't know what caused it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still convinced that it's less of a freak accident and more of a person-caused accident.
More of a Perry accident?
See, I don't know if it was...
Per accident?
Yeah. See, I think that there's a case to be made for it to be Perry, a case to be made for it to be Mary Louise, and a case for it to be made that it was even their father.
Yes, yes. Oh, no, yeah. I agree with that, yeah.
I also think there's a case to be made that, given Mary Louise's level of denial and creating stories in her head, that it could have actually been just an accident, and then she, like, you know, kind of imposed her will upon Perry growing up because of this other thing that it just kind of messed with him too. I think that there's many ways that this could go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, for sure.
And we might not even learn it this season. They need to save some things for season 3.
True.
Is there a season 3?
I don't know. I'm sure there will be. There's money, right?
If we put it out in the universe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll just secret it into existence.
I can't imagine there not being a season 3.
Right. From your lips to HBO's ears.
Exactly. Going back to feedback for this episode, Mike Bloom says, I'm assuming you, like all of us, needed a screenshot to truly question what drove Jane to that hairstyle this season.
Right. Because I had posted a screenshot. And asked the patrons to guess what was going on. And it happened just to be like, Jane, I am going to apparently be in the minority when I say I really like her haircut.
Nope. I'm from Long Island.
I don't think it's doing her any favors.
It is not. Like I said, I'm from Long Island. I know bad bangs. And those are bad bangs. I had bad bangs for the first 33 years of my life.
I think it looks really good on her, and I love the color, and I like the new look. But yeah, okay, I'm the only one that's fine.
I like the color. I think it's a little dark, but I can forgive the color. The bangs are just, they're too blunt. I don't know.
All right.
I'm more of a subtle person. I'm not that blunt, so.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's something to be said when the more lighthearted moments of an episode discussion is criticizing a woman's looks. When we're like, let's go back to that.
Oh, dear.
That being said, I will straight up, girl, I don't like your bangs.
Yep.
Well, I am hashtag team Jane's bangs.
Oh.
Well, Jane's haircut.
Jane bangs. Jane
no,
bangs.
I like Jane's bangs. Jane bangs. I wish this was an episode of the broadcast so I could name the episode Jane's bangs. We could.
We just need to talk about it tomorrow. Talk about our episode today tomorrow, and then
okay, there we go.
Solved it.
There we go. Continuing on. As Susan said, as a teacher, I'd like to give a shout out to the principal and teacher for not becoming violent with Renata or calling the cops on her. And can we give all these ladies Emmys now, especially Meryl Streep and Laura Dern? Laura Dern is playing crazy on a whole new level. Why can't she can't see why her child may have anxiety? Oh, that's right. It's the school's fault and her husband's dot, 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 dot.
Agreed.
Yes. But she goes back to Laura Dern. I know, she's great. Which we didn't even point out, like, on the round table that they had, they talk about, you know, children being very impressionable on their parents, and just like we see Max is got violent tendencies like his father, yeah. Poor Amabella is being affected by her mother's anxiety.
Totally.
Yeah. So yeah. Jacob said the principal became my favorite character uncomfortably fast.
Yeah. MVP of the episode. He really had a moment.
I wanted
he was awesome.
I don't smoke, and I wanted to go have a cigarette with him.
Well, and I will say, like, speaking of people like finding or refining their voices, like, I feel like he's come a long way from season one, where he was like very much intimidated by all of these moms, and now he's like,
oh my god, kind of that's it. Right. We didn't even talk about what Renata said to him, where she was like, pretends like he doesn't smoke anymore, hasn't been laid in 14 years. He did not deny that.
I wondered about that because I was like, oh, she knew about the smoking thing. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's like, right about
she,
it all.
What does she actually know? Yeah.
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 She might not be good at like reading herself, but apparently she can read others.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we got an email from Dennis who said, I found it rather odd that Jane would sit with her rapist mother and look through childhood photos, commenting how much her son looked like her rapist. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts. Well, it wasn't her rapist. The son looked a lot like her rapist brother, who died under mysterious circumstances, for whatever that's worth. And yeah, I mean, we kind of covered this, but like, power to Jane for sitting there and being blunt about it, not letting Mary Louise gaslight her.
Mm-hmm.
But well, also, that was awful.
Yeah, but I think as you said, we sort of already have discussed it, but I think it also harkens back to what we were saying about the complexity of this show, and that nothing is completely good and nothing is completely bad.
Right.
That like to be able to have that really hard conversation and do it in a really kind way, or just mature is probably mature, a better word, a more mature way, I think is really important.
Yeah, agreed. As an emotional person and not a Jane, I have to say, I would not have been able to sit there. So yeah, that about does it for the feedback. If you have anything, again, that you would like to contribute, we love hearing from listeners and we love the discussion that they bring to our podcast. So thebroadcasters3@gmail.com or 331-276-2373. All right, so now it's time for everybody's favorite segment, the local talk. Shandy's local drip. Blissful drip. Whatever.
Okay, so the first thing was that scene between Corey and Jane where they're walking after their date and it looks like, you know, a happening hip town.
Yeah.
That was interesting because I guess, like, I think it helps that they sort of really blur the background. And the only reason that I noticed they were doing that was because I was constantly looking to try to, like, figure out where, you know, where they're filming and stuff. But it certainly makes it look a lot more happening. But I think that they're on Lighthouse Avenue.
Okay.
And my new favorite thing is like screenshot versus picture. So I'll have to go down there. And I think even like one of the restaurants behind them, I think I like recognize the logo. It's like a circle. So I'll try to find that and maybe post a picture. But that was fun. And there's definitely a Monterey bus that goes by. That's like nice. A legit Monterey bus. Yeah. In that street. Then the other thing was that opening scene that they came back to a couple of times with Madeline and Celeste talking in the car.
Yeah.
That is 100% at Point Lobos, which is, it's a state park and natural reserve that's really close to here. And it's also really close to like where their sort of like filming home base was.
Okay.
It's close also to where they filmed my scene. But it's a really beautiful little like gem of a park. And it was just interesting because like you can tell instantly in that parking lot that they're in, that's a place where like a lot of people go and dive from there. It's like a place where you can go dive. And so it's like this little like cove right there where they're parked.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because once I realized that, I was like looking through my phone. I go to this place like fairly often to run or to hike. And I have just like so many pictures of it, but I couldn't find a picture of this particular place because it is a ridiculously gorgeous little park. But like that place where they're at, that's like just, it's not the prettiest of the, so it's just not the, it's not the place you really take pictures of. I did find, however, on my phone, a picture from basically the other side of the cove looking towards where they would have been parked.
Okay.
So I will post that. And then I'll post a couple of the other pictures I have of that place just to show that it's just funny that they were parked there. I mean, I guess it's a place that you can park. So it worked for that, but it's just like in such a beautiful place, it just happens to not be as remarkable as the rest of it. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting, we saw Jane's apartment this time pretty clearly. And that, too, I like immediately recognized. I've seen those apartments before from the beach. It makes sense because we've seen her on that beach before running. And those apartments are like literally on the beach. Like I've seen them from the beach. But my immediate thought was, those are so expensive. So I looked them up.
Could not afford that on whatever she's doing at the aquarium.
She certainly couldn't. I mean, even her little house, like we talked about last, when we talked about the first season, we talked about how expensive that little house would have been. But these apartments, even more so, like it's literally on the beach. So I looked them up. There are currently 14 condos for sale and 3 for rent. So if anyone's interested, they are furnished, which I thought was interesting.
Oh my God, that's like my dream, is to have a furnished apartment.
Yeah. Sorry. So rental prices, I only found one bedrooms for rentals. I found two options. One bedroom, one bath, 817 square feet, $3,000 per month.
Ooh.
But if you're renting month to month, it's $3,500. And then for some reason, the other one was one bedroom, one bath, 785 square feet. So a little bit smaller, $3,800 per month. I'm guessing maybe it has a better view.
Yeah.
So it's like nearly $4,000 per month. And Jane's a single mother.
Yeah. You know, working in an aquarium is a very lucrative business. I mean, that's why people go into the aquarium sinuses.
Me thinks that she's been cashing more of those checks than Celeste.
The only logical explanation, other than just a fairy tale of television.
Right. If, however, she sprung to buy one of them, you can buy a 511 square feet one bedroom condo there for about $450,000.
Oh, that's a steal.
If, however, you want, let's say, like a two bedroom, because, you know, it is her and her son, two bedroom, 1,200 square feet, you're looking at $800,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And okay, now you know then why I don't own in Monterey.
Yeah. That's like Brooklyn prices there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was funny. I would try to get a picture of those too, but it's like gated. So I can maybe go to the beach though. I'm sure they have not gotten sick of that, people coming up to them, those apartments now.
You know, Big Little Lies.
But yeah, and then there was one last thing. I think I've mentioned this before. They have gone to a place with like these cool, like for like a drink, like in the evening, and there's like fire pits and like it looks like a fun place to hang out.
Yes. It does look fun.
Yeah, like I can't figure out where this is. And I think I even said in when we talked about season one, it reminds me of a place, and I was not wrong. I happened upon an article today in people.com, and it talks about all the different places in Monterey that you can visit. And they mentioned that place. It is not, it's a set. It's not an actual place, but it's modeled after this restaurant, 1833, which unfortunately has since closed. But apparently, yeah, it's a huge bummer. I really liked it. Their food was mediocre, but they had excellent drinks and just like a really cool locale. It was in this really big historic house, and there were fire pits in the like front yard that you could sit in. And then in the actual house, they had like different rooms. There was one that was like the living room, and you would like sit on couches. And it was just, it was a really, really cool place to hang out.
That's awesome.
So it's too bad that it closed, but apparently the cast really liked that place too. And they modeled that place after them.
Yeah. Oh, interesting tidbit.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's really cool. Thank you, Shandy. I can't wait for the episode where you're going to tell us all about your actual local.
I think it might be next week.
There's
a shot of the two of them in what looks like a camp bed.
Yeah, there is.
I don't know. I think that might be. They're somewhere out of their everyday, I think.
I am going to predict that it happens within the next 4 episodes.
I think you're correct. But I really do. Yeah, I think it's going to be next episode.
Ooh, very exciting. I think we're ready. Very exciting.
I'm so excited. I can't wait.
All right, let's move into the music. There wasn't a whole lot of music this episode, right?
There wasn't a whole lot of music. And I think the one thing that I tried to look up, and maybe it's not a real song that exists, but song that Bonnie's mom is singing to her daughter in the very beginning where Bonnie comes in. I couldn't find that anywhere in the interwebs as to what that song was. So if anyone knows it, write in, let us know. I thought it was such a beautiful scene, and every other recap I've come across that has outlined the music of the episode did not include that. So I don't know, maybe it's just something they made up for the episode, but that was actually my favorite musical moment of the entire episode. So I was really bummed that I couldn't find any info about it.
Yeah, if anybody out there knows, please let us know. Amanda would love to sing it for you.
I would love to sing it for you. I would.
I actually really liked the closing sequence.
I did too.
Yeah. Dreaming My Dreams With You by Cowboy Junkies.
Yes.
I don't know the song, but I liked it. I thought that it kind of fit well with everybody's different, you know, things that they were going through.
Yeah. I think it had just like a real, dreamlike quality, as the title of the song would indicate. But I think it also did a really good job of kind of crystallizing how all of our characters are kind of being set up at the beginning of like a journey that's going to take them into the rest of the season. Like sort of everyone is kind of on a path.
Yeah.
The only other song moment within the show that also really jumped out to me was when Madeline and Abigail were talking in Abigail's room. They were playing Keep On Loving You by Cigarettes After Sex. And I didn't realize until I went and was like looking it up afterward, it is a cover of an REO Speedwagon song. They're like, I'm gonna keep on loving you.
Oh
my God.
You never hear the chorus, or it's playing low enough that it didn't register that.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, that's just like some cool hip song. But no, it's just it is a cool hip song, but it's a cool hip cover of a less cool hip song. And I just blew my mind. Like, yeah. I don't necessarily, I mean, yes, the sort of levels of like, you know, Ed's not going to leave you, like everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, like the thematically the song works, but I mm-hmm. think just as a song, I really love how the show really utilizes really interesting covers in really unique ways.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do that. Thank you, Amanda. Yay, music.
Mm-hmm. Huzzah.
Huzzah. I think, yeah, that about does it for our episode tonight. Thank you to everybody that contributed to our feedback. Thank you to the patrons, as always. Again, if you would like to become a patron, go to patreon.com/JaneJack. A special thank you to the patrons that contribute at a certain level, and that would be Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Rickner, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with a Plan, Drake the Distributor, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Ed, who is not the one that's married to.
Different Ed.
Yeah, Ed. Our not Ed. The I'll have coffee with Bonnie Ed. A different Ed.
I'll be as bad as I want to be.
Yeah, yeah. Ed, I'll stalk you like you have my grandchild, Ed. Just kidding, Ed. We love you. You're probably not even listening to this now. But yeah. All right, well... On that note, thank you guys so much for listening. Again, if you have anything, thebroadcasters3@gmail.com, or you can give us a call, 331-276-2373. We would love to hear from you. Please check out The Broadcast. That is our other podcast. We have a lot of fun over there. We just started season 4. And yeah, I think that's it. Well, on that note, thanks for listening. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Chandy.
Bye, everybody. Peace out.
Bye.
See ya.